The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome to Wagon Wheel. I am Jared Kimber, and this is the Cricket Podcast where we answer your questions. Best way to ask questions is at patreon.com/Jared Kimber. You can sign up for a membership there, as all the people I'm about to read out have. And the other way, of course, on this particular show is a super chat. We would definitely read those out, but anything that you put in the comments, who knows, I might be able to pick them up. Let us start with Vivek, who says, hi, Jared. What do you make of the high-ish full toss as a bowling option, CDE, in the IPL? As a bowler, if you can keep it below the waistline, that would be the tricky bit. Is there a high chance of getting a wicket by hitting the bat closer to the handle? With the recent rule change in the IPL, are we likely to see bowlers go for that option? I don't think we've had a recent rule change. What we've actually had is the correct way of measuring these things. As in a measurements rather than just a guess from before. Always would annoy me when an umpire is trying to work it out and you're like, why are you just not putting an image of the guy standing up straight earlier? Like something as simple as that. And now we've got the exact measurement, which is an even better option. Again, something that I wrote about like a long time ago. Anyway, it's weird how many obvious things in cricket take absolutely forever sometimes. But it's not weird. I know exactly what happens. Vivek, I haven't had a look at full tosses and their stats for a long time. But the last time I looked at full tosses and their stats would have been about 10 years ago. And this was all full tosses, including low full tosses, and that's why I looked it up at the time, because people told me low full tosses are still a good ball in cricket. And when we looked it up, what we actually saw was, of course, they are horrendous ball in cricket. And full tosses in general, and I don't have them split in any database that I'm aware of by height, but full tosses in general, at that stage, were going at more than 2 runs a ball. Think about that. That's not at the end of game when people are slogging. That is all the way through. It is very, very easy to be able to do that. Let me just try and come up with here we go. I think I can bring this all up. You kind of have to take the spinners out of this because I think you're talking about fast bowlers. But let's just have a look. A spin bowler, full toss. You're still at around 2 runs per ball. So they're a little bit different. Those aren't as scary. And quite often they do get punched down the ground. And pace bowling, full toss, it's 2 runs a ball. It's a lot more than that, actually. It is 14 runs and over. So the only other ball that's close is the bouncer. So if you've got 14 runs and over coming from that, you then would have to work out the exact way of delivering it. So John Boy did a video about how a very smart bowler can bowl the ball going up and then coming down and not get a no ball. I don't know if he knows the full laws, but the laws, of course, are if you bowl 2 of those, you can't bowl again. So when you say option C, D, and E, it's really more option like Q, right? Let's say you were working on it in the nets and you had the ability to do it. Most full tosses, York has gone wrong, right? That's what most full tosses are in limited overs cricket. So if you're trying to bowl a full toss and you miss it by a foot, you're just going to be bowling another no ball. And if you bowl 2 of those in a row, you can't bowl again. The other thing is that you're right. Waist-high full tosses. This is why I think the law's a bit silly. I kind of think anything above the knee should actually be a free hit. Just because I think it gets very dangerous very quickly. Now with slow balls dipping late and everything, I think the actual law is wrong. I think it should be lower. If the idea is there to keep the game safer, the ball that Virat Kohli faced the other day, I would suggest was not a safe delivery. Under the laws, he should have been given out. I'm not saying he should have stayed in, but what I'm saying is I don't think it was a safe delivery in the first place. But yeah, because you can't bowl two in a row, I don't really see this as a valid option. And you're going at 14 runs and over, and you are going to miss it on the high side occasionally, which means that 14 runs and over is suddenly going to be a lot more because you're going to bowl some at least one free hit for it. I would say you would bowl one free hit for every two that you try and deliver would be my guess based on your Yorker numbers. So if that's the case, it's probably not worth it, right? I think you'd have to say, don't do it. Ben says, who are the batters that bowling teams tried their best not to activate? I just saw a clip of Gilchrist saying the Aussies had team meetings where he was explicitly stated not to talk to Brian Lara. Yeah, Steve Waugh was another player that teams were told not to talk to. Trying to think of someone else. There's others. I should know this. And I've just off the top of my head, Ben, I'm trying to think if there's any other obvious ones. Oh, well, there's obviously the whole Kirtley thing and Dean Jones getting him to take his armbands off. So there's a lot of fast bowlers you don't want to get under their skin. Trying to think of anyone else that's specifically teams have gone in. But there's lots of teams. It's quite a common thing for some players just not to talk to them. That's the tactic. But I don't think that's an activate tactic, although it kind of is. But what you're trying to do is find out what that batter's happy place is. Lara is an extreme example of this kind of thing. And Steve Waugh is probably an extreme example of this kind of thing, right? But actually, if you go through all the way through, you will find that there are batters, the best thing to do is chat to them casually. There are best things to do is treat them like your friend. The best thing to do is, and so that's really what you're trying to do all the way. So technically you're always trying not to activate good players and you're trying to put them in a position that isn't going to get them into, you know, their flow state or whatever that may be. We did a podcast with Rathi Konan, who's, I have his book here. About all this sort of stuff. If you can go back and find it, Ben, it's about trash talk and sledging and everything else. So it's quite interesting why you do it. But yeah, so I would almost go as far as let's say there's no player that you really want to find their triggers, whatever their triggers may be. Ben says, test batters seem to be working out how to play the wobble ball more than they were 3 or 4 years ago. Definitely. How are they doing this? They worked out that the wobble ball's main superpower is that length. So you want to be hitting, if you're hitting the top of the stumps over and over again, that's a combination of the wobble ball and DRS that has brought that about. That means you have to bowl a very consistent length. And that consistent length, you can come down the crease. And you can, so we saw Daryl Mitchell, we saw the Pakistani batters, and we saw the England batters all doing that in slightly different ways. But essentially taking away that length from bowlers and making it too full. So someone like Ollie Pope, he will take a couple of steps down. Suddenly he's got a half volley on off stump, not a length ball. And the other thing about the wobble ball is, yes, it can dart around quite violently, but a lot of them go very straight. So if you get to them quite full, you have the access to be able to do that. And I think I worked out most of those players were doing it about a third of the time. So the bowler still got two of their good balls in, but then they got one of their bad balls in, and that was quite often scored off. And suddenly the game was changed. Secondly, in the constant arms race between the bat and the ball, what do you predict the next major development from either side? Well, I mean, we can't. That's the thing. You can never really work out what that next development is going to be. Like, for instance, I was positive by this stage that finger spinners would be bowling knuckleballs. And we have, like, two of them. I haven't seen Mark Watt. Mark Watt must bowl a knuckleball, right? But there aren't many doing that. So even when you think you're onto something, you're not, I suppose, is the best way of looking at it. What else have we talked about? Yeah, I can't think. I mean, the coming down the wicket batting and the bat, and then the next part of that, which is kind of linked to it, is this baseball style, right? Of how quickly can we soften the ball? So, you know, traditionally cricket was about getting the ball, taking the polish off the ball with defensive batters. And, you know, I've just talked to Ian Chappell recently, and he said that every team should have an attacking opener. And, you know, he went through a bunch of the reasons. But one is just as simple as anything, that cricket balls degrade, right? It gets to a certain point where you need the ball to not be as good. And if you can hit it very hard, very often, we can do that. So we're seeing that. So what's the next logical step beyond that? There's another one that we haven't talked much about. I mean, I've mentioned it a few times, but not massively, which is the sort of the death of the part-time test bowler, I think is a really interesting one in test cricket. Now we expect our bowlers to be fit enough to bowl 25 overs a day if needed. Certainly 22 and a half is kind of standard. And we're also probably seeing more teams trying all-rounders now that are genuine all-rounders rather than, you know, Mark Waugh bowling a little bit for you or Viv Richards bowling a little bit for you and those sorts of things. So those kinds of all-rounders have disappeared a little bit more and genuine all-rounders are coming through. Bloody says, Indians read their history textbooks with a face of horror when they find out that the most popular cricket tournament in British India was the Bombay Pentangular, a tournament based on religions, Hindus, Muslims, Europeans, Parsi, and others, which Gandhi wanted abolished. In Sri Lanka, oh, have we got all of that question? Oh, let me just see if there's more of that question, and it didn't come through. In Sri Lanka, the first-class team is partially consist of ethnic teams. Yep, that is very, very true as well. Sorry, let me just get my Patreon up. See where that question is. Oh. I'm not expecting mass demonstrations, but I thought there would at least be some critical articles online. It's you know, cricket teams formed in very different ways in different parts of the world. So, of course, you know, you have Pakistan is famous for having sort of, what would you call them, state-run cricket teams, you know, the railways and the airlines and, you know, all those sorts of teams. So you do get ethnic cricket teams in different parts of the world. I don't think it's just a Sri Lanka and India thing as well. I'm pretty sure, I want to say Kenya is another one where that kind of thing happens. You've then got racial cricket clubs throughout the West Indies and obviously South Africa and Namibia and Zimbabwe all have those sorts of things. Religion is really plays an interesting part in Australian cricket too, the Catholics versus the Protestants. You know, that whole Don Bradman versus all of his teammates thing is essentially a religious divide. So there are lots of these things throughout the game. At a certain point, a first-class team becomes a first-class team, if that makes sense. And they, while they, you know, it's a bit like Yorkshire, everyone has to be from Yorkshire to play for Yorkshire. Well, that stops after a while. And the same with these religious teams, the same with the, what would we call the other ones? The government-led teams of different districts and, you know, all those sorts of different things. They all kind of just become first-class teams at a certain point. I'm sure there is critical stuff of them. I think if you really want to find criticism, it wouldn't be online articles, bloody, because by this stage, people, you know, they've just been around for so long. But I'm sure if you go back to newspaper article archives, you would find it. So, for instance, that and I'm basing this on other things, like there's a lot of people that will say that the term Chinaman, which is obviously a racist term, was the stories around it have never been true, right? So it was, you know, it was a Chong who took the wicket, and then they used that phrase. Whereas actually, the phrase was around about 10 years before that. We know it comes out of Yorkshire, and we know that people at that time in Yorkshire said that it was racist. So when modern people go, it's not racist, it's like, it was literally said to be racist in 1920s, right? So we have that. But if you go through, it takes a long time, again, before that sort of comes back up, because at a certain point, it becomes accepted. So it really isn't till probably, I wrote about it for Cricket with Balls. Andrew Wu obviously had some issues with it, the Australian cricket journalist. I want to say there was someone else in cricket that was someone who was public. I know Mel Jones had talked about it on commentary quite a bit, but it kind of needed that secondary wave. You know, and I can't remember if there was anything about Mark Chapman as well, or the Hong Kong team in general, I've got a feeling there was something to do with the Hong Kong team that where it flared up again as well. But I could be misremembering that. So you are coming into the game, but that is a thing that for a long time people accepted, but at the time was seen as racist, right? So my guess is if you go back to archives, you might see people go, why are we doing these cricket teams based on religious beliefs or ethnic divides or whatever it may be, right? And then they sort of, and then that just becomes standard and we forget about it for a long time. I could be wrong, but it's a really, really interesting one. But it's, as I said, it's probably more prevalent than you think. There are still, I still know of like Jewish cricket teams, for instance. There's a lot of Asian cricket teams in England and Australia now. I don't know if they have them in New Zealand as well. But, you know, club cricket teams that are run by Asian, by Asians for Asians. So we get that sort of stuff happening quite a bit as well. Sorry, I now have a cat on my desk. At a certain point, it's because cricket is living in an imperfect world, and cricket is an imperfect. I was just about to make a really big good point then, Mothra, and you slammed my drink bottle down on me. So cricket is it lives in this imperfect world, and you know it is as involved with that as anything else is. But thank you very much for the question. Let us take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with more questions here on Wagon Wheel. Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts, and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Am I wearing the same t-shirt as I was in that ad? I didn't want to do that. Sorry. I want to do this one. Jessica says, can we see the cat again? Look, let's be honest with this cat. These cats, they're kind of doing what they want. They were all the way through that ad, were just fighting on my desk. And now I'm hoping I'm still online because I think they might have attacked my Wi-Fi box. So apologies. Got two kittens. They're a bit nuts. And so they do some weird things. Let's get back to the actual questions and stop talking about the stupid cats. And we have... We just had bloody... So we will have Josh, who says, which of the following opening batters would best complement a T20 11 featuring Bumrah, Malinga and Rashid Khan? Mitchell Stark or Trent Bolt or Samuel Badgery? Are we talking about all time? We're talking about all time. You would probably take Mitchell Stark because he was the best. But if you're talking about purely to complement these people... It probably makes more sense to use Trent Bolt because, although the thing is with Trent Bolt and his average is ridiculous in the first over and in the third over, it's like 40 and then in the fifth over, it's like 60. So I'm not sure he is that much better, but there's at least a feeling you can bowl Trent Bolt for those three overs. Whereas I don't think at any stage in Mitchell Stark's T20 career, you really wanted him to bowling all three, probably just the first two. So if you're talking about complementing, that would go quite well. I think Badgery could be interesting here as well because with Badgery, you would get a chance because you've given me three bowlers though, haven't you? That's the interesting thing about this. Because with Badgery, we know we're going to get three overs up front. That is what he's going to do. I would rather though Badgery with Bolt or Stark rather than Badgery just on his own. Just from a point of view is I think Badgery was fantastic, but I want to also swing the ball in that early bit. So... Let's go Bolt because what Stark does there is more like Stark's use when at his peak is at the death, whereas Bolt's peak is always going to be in the power play. And so Bumrah and Malinga and Rashid Khan can look after the back end a little bit more. But I would be considering Badgery because Badgery allows you then to have leg spin being bowled from the second over till the 14th, 16th over, something like that. And then you can Bumrah, Malinga, and you can get another Trent Bolt over in as well outside the power play early on. So I think that could be quite interesting with that particular thing that you've given us. Josh says, batting, bowling, and notable omitted names aside, how would you rate this dream Test 11 as a fielding unit? Gavaskar, Hayden, Ponting, Callis, Tendulkar, Sobers, Sangakkara, Imran, Jadeja, Ashwin, Hadley. How did Ashwin get in this side? Surely you'd have Warne ahead of Ashwin, because you would have, you would put Warne in at third slip and you would put Sobers in at anywhere else you wanted him to be. I mean, Sobers would be the world's greatest mid-on in that situation. I know you've said notable names aside. I'm just saying from a, if you're picking a spinner and a second spinner, I think Warne makes more sense, or even Graham Swan. Both of those guys probably make more sense than Ashwin. How would you rate this dream 11 as a fielding unit? Yeah, I don't know if Gavaskar is the best first slip of all time. So I think you can probably get better slippers, but I'm trying to think of an opener who's a better first slip than Gavaskar, which I do think is an interesting one. You would probably not pick Hayden because you would have, you would use Joel Garner as a bowler there and have him as your gully so that you can even strengthen your fielding even more. But yeah, it's a very, very good side. It's a fascinating way of looking at it. And, you know, I think sometimes it would be very interesting to come up with the absolute best fielding 11, but also a version of like this again, where you could try and get the best player and the best fielder at the same time. But yeah, I don't think you'd use Callis, for instance. I think you use Clive Lloyd. You got Tendulkar at mid off. There must be another, maybe there's not. I'm trying to think. There must be another batter that you could put in there that would be, although Tendulkar as a mid-off is actually a fascinating fielder because of the way he thinks about the game. Anyway, great question. Satchmo says, if you had a Garner and Ambrose in your all-time West Indies 11, how would you ensure that their bowling wasn't too similar to provide different challenges to the batters? I wouldn't worry about it, Satchmo, because I have two guys who are 6'5", 6'7", who bowl with high release points, who can both bowl very, very fast, are incredibly accurate at average 20. If you can find me a list of batters who like facing those two kinds of bowlers, then I would more than happily drop one of those guys. You won't be able to find it because it doesn't exist, because it is the worst kind of bowling to face. I've told this story before, but the Australians used to call Morne Morkel the monster. Morne Morkel wasn't as talented as either of these two people. Oh, sorry, he wasn't as good as either of these two people, but he had that same talent level that both of them had. He just didn't understand the game as well as they did. He wasn't as accurate as they were. But the reason they called Morne Morkel the monster, even though Dale Steyn was in that side and Vernon Philander was in that side, was because Morne Morkel's best ball was ridiculous. It was back of a length, but coming up at the underside of your rib cage. You couldn't get out the way of it. You couldn't pull it correctly. It was hard to defend. It came out of the sky because he was, you know, such a tall guy as well. Steve Harmison, all those sorts of guys. So of all the bowlers, I'm not worried about having two kinds of. It's going to be two right arm tall, fast seamers who are deadly accurate, who average about 20. I'd pick all four of them and just say good luck to everyone else. This one's gone off. I think this question's from Jessica though, but I think Muku might have just dropped the name. Let me just check. Yeah, Jessica says, when you're doing historical research work, what is your approach when faced with anecdotes that you suspect are apocryphal? I remember reading some stories about Doug Walters that sounded to me like tall tales. Yeah, I mean, the drinking stories about Doug Walters, I mean, I think we know are fake. Not that he didn't drink a lot on a plane. I'm sure that he did. But the actual number of cans that he drank on that plane changed after a few years, which tells you everything that you need to know about the nonsense of that particular thing. What's another thing that... Yeah, so when you get a story like that, I usually say it's probably apocryphal in my research if I'm doing it. But I think if you look at stories like that, they are, the David Boone one's really interesting, but in general case in Dougie Walters, they're just trying to get across that Dougie Walters wasn't the most professional guy. He did like to drink and gamble and smoke and everything else. And that story allows you to tell that. And you could say it's apocryphal, but it also still means something, that is the story that is being pushed or talked about when it comes to him. So yeah, I do think that those things matter, but yeah, you get a lot of them. And it is tough. I mean, me and Abhishek, you know, we quite often, talk about, you know, I will run something by him and just be like, and he'll be like, oh, I never really thought about that before, but you're right. I can see why that might not make any sense. You're trying to get back to what the source material is for it. So one of the most famous ones, of course, is that women invented overarm bowling. And it takes about a minute and a half to work out that isn't true. And there are a lot of people now that still get upset because they use that as, oh, well, of course, women invented overarm bowling. And I was like, well, they didn't, because Tom Walker had bowled overarm bowling 15 years before women did. And the story about the woman helping her brother, who becomes a round-arm bowler, it doesn't make any sense from a fashion perspective, right? But people still want to share that story, and they're going to keep sharing that story. So it's up to me to say that it isn't correct. But I did have to research that one. You know, that there's quite a few little stories from different players that come up from time to time and that are very hard. There's also a lot of that sort of Neville Carter stuff, where Neville Carter's wrote about games that he might not have been at and everything else. That it's baked in, but as a researcher, does this actually make sense factually is the first thing. So in the Dougie Walters drinking story, it's like, well, who's counting cans when they're all hammered? Right? What flight attendant in the world is on a flight for 24 hours and counting cans and knows which person they've given cans to as people move around the plane and all sorts of things? It's just, it's nonsense, right? So we can sometimes debunk it in that kind of way. But yeah, there are other ways. I think you just have to put a flag on it and just let the audience know, this is the story. We have nothing to back this up. And sometimes you won't use it because you'll be like, I don't even think this is close enough to being true. So I don't want to be involved in this one. Oh, yeah. Ram Kumar says, can you name India's 15 for the T20 World Cup? No, because if I could do that, I would be Ajit Agarkar. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say Ajit Agarkar doesn't have his team. You know, you've got Abhishek coming through. Who else? You've got the whole wicketkeeper issue. You've got the whole Hardik Pandya issue. Mohit Sharma, who at the start of this IPL, I thought by now would be a certainty, probably no longer a certainty. You know, there's a lot of questions that I think you can ask about what India is going to be able to do for that squad that I wouldn't even know where to start at the moment. It's a really, those next 2 weeks, probably there's going to be a couple of players who are going to swing wildly between being in the team and not being in the team and vice versa. Oh, actually, let me take another quick break here on Wagon Wheel, and we will be back in a moment with more cricket.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
All right, welcome back. Just seen that Rachin Ravindra has been dropped by Chennai for Daryl Mitchell. I think that's it may not work, but I think that's a clever move good on them for doing that. We don't always get smart moves, so let's enjoy the ones we have. Ram Kumar says, of all RCB's follies, where were they the worst? Scouting, auction, playing 11, on-field tactics, team culture. Ooh. They're probably... Well, I was involved with them at the auction. And I think that was the year they really tried to get things together and were smarter, and they were absolutely not together or smarter. Scouting's an interesting one because they did scout Sarfraz Khan, right? And they were probably right with his talent level. And so you have to give them that credit, but also it didn't work and it hasn't worked with him there. And what are their other major scouting pickups? Like, who are their other... They got Harshal Patel, but Harshal Patel's probably more of a... Like, he played before, right? So he's almost, it's still a good move, but it's not a scouting move. So how many young players have they come through, trusted for a long period of time, and kept, and you know, so Washington Sundar, they didn't quite make him work. But again, that goes back to on-field tactics. And now he's still not the player that he probably should be. This is a fascinating question, Ram, because we don't have beat writers, right? And I'm not an RCB beat writer. This is why we need proper beat writers in cricket, because I think fans, this is exactly what we should know about our cricket teams, about what is now a famous failed cricket franchise, right? And I'm not sure I have the information I need to be able to give it to you perfectly. I think there are problems with every single thing that you're going for. But if you really want to know, it's probably ownership over two different ownership groups. The buck has to stop with them at a certain point. And I must have been there not long after DiMaggio came on board. And I didn't think, I still think they're too heavily involved. I still think they're trying to placate. I mean, you could also put Virat Kohli, but not Virat Kohli, the player. Virat Kohli, the status, the way that everyone treats him in that franchise, because that has not helped them. That might be the single biggest issue they've had since those early days when they were absolutely nuts because of Vijay Mallya, has been the constant placating of Virat Kohli rather than trying to put the best cricket team on the field to win games. And that is a scouting thing, an auction thing, a playing 11 thing, an on-field tactics thing, and team culture. And I don't blame Virat Kohli only because I don't think they've really ever got to a position where they've tried to get him into the right. I think they've tried to, I've said this before, I think they try and run that franchise as what will Virat be most okay with. And that is a terrible way to run a franchise, right? Because if you were saying, we are running this franchise because Virat Kohli is demanding this, 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 and this, I'd be like, well, that's fair. If he's demanded it, then and he's your biggest star and you want to keep him and you know you sell a lot of shirts with his name on them, that's fair. But my understanding is it's not even him demanding it. So that's, you're deferring to someone who's not even fully engaged in that way. And I could be wrong because I was only briefly involved, but that is my understanding of how that franchise was run. And, you know, I probably have a friend who's an analyst there or something, or a coach there at the moment. I could ask, but, you know, you don't want to put them in a bad situation because it can be quite a toxic kind of one. You know, a lot of those guys are playing for their job and everything else. And there's a lot of factions. So the team culture one does come back. Ram again with a hat trick. The Crick Picks episode where you all had to scrape at the bottom to find players was easily the best. The funny thing is when you say that, I don't know what that is. Was that the openers or was that the spinners one? We want more of that. Entertaining and more work for the brain. Who wants Crick Picks where you pick 15 or 50 worthy candidates? Yeah, I think what I love about that draft format, right, is that it does allow you to have, you know, really, really different. So we just had one, Ram, that's coming up soon, which is on franchise shirts. There were very few doubles in that list, right? Because there are hundreds and hundreds of franchise shirts. So that becomes the interesting thing of, I'm going to pick all these shirts. And then I know that every single person who's watching is going, oh, you forgot about this shirt. You forgot about that shirt, right? Whereas it's impossible to get to all that. And then you get the opposite, right? So Jessica was really upset that we didn't put Chhateshwar Pujara on our best openers list. And I was like, well, he's opened 3 times in 9 years in Test cricket. I think those numbers are right. And he's not currently an Indian player. But her argument is quite valid that he might still be in the best 15 openers in the world. I mean, you could also make that argument for Alistair Cook probably as well. So you do get to a certain point, right, where it gets a little bit more confusing. And sometimes that's better. And sometimes the endless ones are better. You know, I think that the ones that make people the most mad are the ones where there's 1,000 options and you can't use, and they look at cricket one way or they think about things in one particular way. But it's endless and it goes in both directions. So I find it really, really fascinating. If you haven't seen Crick Picks, I was really glad. It was something I wanted to do for a long time. I was going to do it with Matt Roller, but I will eventually try and get Matt Roller on another podcast and I'm sure we'll do something together. But when we had Bayram and then I was hiring Estelle as well, I was like, no, this is another 3 good people to be able to do that with. Just for anyone who's looking for Mothra, Mothra's back. So we all know that's going to go horribly wrong in a moment. But yeah, I love It's such a cool podcast, and we'll be trying to come up with more and more things like that. Me and Andy Zaltzman have a podcast series that we want to do together, and hopefully, you know, if we get funding and everything else, we can start to have a regular podcast with him as well. It's something that we can look at going into the future. I'm trying to think of some of the other things that we can do. I'm still trying to get a former player on permanently on the podcast. Again, you know, making this more like a network as well. So maybe a partnership with a former player where they come on and do that. But it has to be someone who kind of watches a lot of cricket and is still interested in the topics. And it's not always that easy to find those sorts of people. And it has to be someone who, you know, I can get along with quite well and all those sorts of things and is available and all that sort of stuff. So we are looking at adding quite a few other podcasts. We want to, another thing that we've been looking at doing is a podcast on sort of the Asian game in general, you know, so India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, you know, I suppose Nepal, you know, that sort of, what are the big issues from those? Because they're quite often very different than some of the other issues, you know, getting shows like that up, you know, we really do want it, you know, when I was involved in 91.94, the idea was to cover as many things as possible. I am one person, so I'm trying to do it myself at the moment, but we want to get more and more shows. So thank you for everyone's support on Crick Picks, even if most of you disagree with every single thing that Bayram says. I think that's fair, and I'm all for that. All right, let's get back to the super chats. We've got some super chats in here and just some normal chats in the room. But Specky says, how did the ICC member boards cooperate long enough to form the WTC and Super League? Can it happen again to make international cricket more meritocratic? I didn't say that word great, did I? I think there was a bit of an opening where there was a bit of a power vacuum within the ICC after the sort of Giles Clark, Srinivasan joint collapses, you know. And so that big three power group was no longer really together. You had the sort of the Ganguly sort of period, and the BCCI was more worried about internal politics for a little while. ECB was more worried about internal politics. And so that sort of came together. And also there was a genuine movement where the ICC had a slight little power, but you know, a base, and they brought the WTC in. And the Super League, I think the Super League also, you got to remember that a lot of the people involved in global cricket are older. And so a lot of them, there was a whole generation that were coming through that, you know, maybe they were in their 40s and 50s and they had grown up with one day cricket as being a really big thing. So they probably, the Super League was their chance of bringing that together. And also I think that the thought process is that would be a way of helping one day cricket, knowing that it was in trouble. Obviously, it was fantastic in many ways, but it's just there's too much of it and it doesn't really fit. WTC was, again, even older people involved in cricket trying to save Test cricket. So there is actually a reason for it to exist. But if you really look at the WTC, it doesn't really change things all that much. People can still do their individual plans and play people. They can still play outside the WTC and everything else. So it kind of placates the top and helps the bottom. Super League was a little bit different. But yeah, it was, I think it was really coming out of a big generation of people coming through in the game who had decided that they wanted to save that thing that they liked a lot. Arco says, Sun on Nine chucking. Okay. Is Sun on Nine being called for chucking? Have I missed something? I mean, I know he has, but like now, did it just happen? And I was, rules out. I haven't seen anything. So I'm not really sure what that's in regards to Arco. Made me think that Ajmal could use the same tactics. Get unbanned with remodeled action, but then retire and bowl with old action in franchise circuits. And has there been others? Well, Sun on Nine's been called in franchise tournaments as well. There was a period of time when Sun on Nine was a huge star in Kolkata, were quite an important franchise in cricket, where there was a feeling within cricket that Narine was getting away with chucking. And then that wasn't happening. For a while. But if you look at it, my memory of it is it was the same time that everyone was getting away with chucking and that there were a lot of dodgy actions at that stage. Sun on Nine has changed his action quite a bit if you go back to when he was called at that time. there was actually, you know, legitimate issues with his action for a long period of time too. It wasn't like it was a brief thing. I know franchises who wouldn't pick him up because they were worried about his action, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there is certainly that. Syed Ajmal's action was way worse than probably anyone else's has ever got to. Sonnen Oren's main skill now is probably the knuckleball, and I think he probably more often than not bowls with a bent arm now, but he probably doesn't straighten his arm anywhere near as much as he should. Look, I think all bowlers chuck, so I think these sort of conversations are kind of pointless. If you really want to stop chucking happening in cricket, you have to have sensors on bowlers' arms or some sort of modelling that can do that from off the field. There are cheap ways of doing it. There are expensive ways of doing it. But any bowler in the world, there are fast bowlers that you absolutely love, Arco, who have chucked in this tournament, right? And it will happen again and again and again until we actually start doing it correctly. Sonal says, why so many World Cups? It is not enjoyable anymore, especially coming from an Indian fan. Sonal, I don't think you represent all Indians, and I'm going to base that on the fact that we had about 10 million hits on our YouTube page during the last World Cup, right? So clearly they are enjoyable to lots of people. There's too many. The reason there's so many is because the ICC was trying to get more money and power so that they could actually run the game. And their only currency is hosting events. So we have a lot of events and it's not a healthy place for the game to be in. And, you know, so my plumber is a South African, and he came by the other day and he was saying, you must be happy to get the World Cup finished. And I was like, there's another World Cup in June. And then there's a Women's World Cup in October, September, whenever that one is. And he just looked at me dumbfounded, right? And this is someone who knows about cricket. Like, it is a ridiculous situation that we are in. And when no one runs cricket, this is the sort of stuff you get. Manan says, I hope you caught Denver's game last night. I did. I didn't watch it live. You can probably tell I'm a bit blocked up at the moment, so unfortunately I didn't get a chance to watch the game live, but I got up and watched the last 5 minutes this morning. Fascinating 10 in a row against the Lakers. I think the other good thing for, you know, the Nuggets at the moment is they're not playing particularly great, and they're, you know, still doing really, really well. And if you haven't seen the DMVR live watch along of them watching the end of the game, and I probably won't get a chance to write about this, sorry Mothra, can you just not put your claws into me at all times. Thank you. They did a live watch along, and it's funny because I really hate when the BBC and the ABC and NBC and all these different places do like watch the commentators celebrating stuff. And we do it sometimes at TalkSport. I've done it at SEN. I don't like it, right? And I understand why you have to do it. And certainly I've been involved in telling some of these companies that they should do it, but I don't like it. On a couple of different reasons. I don't like making the commentators the big part of it. But also there is an element of what you're pretending to be unbiased all the way through it, and then suddenly you're really biased because someone from your country has done something or your team has done something. So I find it really weird. But DMVR, the podcast or the network that follows the Denver Nuggets, is not that way. In fact, they are completely biased. And it took me back to like Test Match Sofa and the joy of having a bunch of fans on a couch. And, you know, the DMVR people are literally invested in the company and the team being successful and everything else. And there's at the start of their latest podcast, and I think you'd see it on their YouTube channel as well, is the watch along. It's one of the most joyous moments of all time of these guys watching the Jamal Murray shot. It was absolutely brilliant.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Oren says, do you think the prominence of 75-mile-an-hour bowls in county cricket has held back England for decades? Yes. Do you think the Kookaburra in county cricket would make England an elite team? No, it's not going to change everything. You want flatter wickets, you want harder wickets, you want wickets that spin more, and you want the Kookaburra. It has to be everything. If it's just one thing, that's not going to change. But yes, it's, you know, a 75-mile-an-hour seamer is of no use to you at test level, right? They just aren't 75 mile an hour seamers who dominate at that higher level anymore. That doesn't mean that you can't occasionally get a freak from them. And it doesn't also mean that someone like Jimmy Anderson, who is kind of very skilled in the same way as some of those guys, hasn't been a success. So I think you can go and say, well, wait, we have had Jimmy Anderson. But we know that England seamers struggle when they go away. And it's because, how would they not? They're using a Jukes ball on helpful surfaces over and over and over again. That's how they get selected for their country. That's for their county, I should say, sorry. And that it makes 100% sense, Oren, that is what a county would pick because that's what they need. But the problem is that is not what England need. But this goes back to the other thing of what is county cricket's role? And I think there's two very different arguments. And we talked about it on the overthrows last night. Or not overthrows. Whatever the podcast we did last night. I can't even remember what I did now. I was out of my mind last night. Noah says, World Cup 15 in comments. Please rate, modify. I don't understand this question. World Cup 15 was huge for me. You know, I got to travel around it. So it was incredible to be in New Zealand specifically during that World Cup. I absolutely loved it from that perspective. Australia won it again, so I think we've seen a few of those. But I thought the New Zealand arc was absolutely beautiful. That Afghanistan Scotland game, Bangladesh's success. So I think there were some good things, but I'm not really sure what your question is there, if we're being honest. ABCD says, did Harmanpreet's innings 171 at 7 final change cricket more than any other single innings? So the other one, well, the other two are probably Misbah in the World T20 final and Brendan McCullum in the IPL. Those are the three that probably make the most sense. I'm trying to think back. Could you also put Clive Lloyd in the 75 World Cup final in that as well? A lot of people probably mentioned the Kapil Dev one, but obviously in the end that didn't matter as much, even if no one knew it didn't matter. Like, it's still incredible. But that probably doesn't matter as much just because they would have qualified anyway. The thing is, that this is what I was frustrated with women's sport. You had the whole, no one watches it, no one cares about it anyway, idiots. Let's move them to one side. You then had this whole other group who was saying, you can't make any money off it. Whereas at the same time, we were actually seeing advertisers wanting athletic women in their campaigns, right? There's that whole thing of, and I've heard people say this before, when Nike started putting athletic women in their campaigns rather than, you know, Michael Jordan, everything else, things changed. It's like, yeah, they found more women to put sneakers on, right? Nike wasn't doing it because they're woke. Nike was doing it because they realized that they weren't selling enough athletic stuff to women. And so they changed what they were doing. So if Nike was doing that and other sporting companies were doing that, the same thing was happening within just general advertising. So I remember Investec, when they were involved with the cricket team, and their big thing was the women's hockey side, right? England women's hockey side. I think I'm right in saying they sponsored the England women's hockey side, and they absolutely loved the England women's hockey side because they couldn't really change anything for the England men's cricket team, right? They could give them money, but they couldn't give them enough money to change things. Whereas they thought to themselves, they could have a real success with that. And I think Commonwealth Bank did a similar thing with the Australian women's team at one side, which was probably why they were called the Southern Stars. With a little bit of money in women's sport, you can make a big difference. And I was watching this happen 10 and 15 years ago, right? And going, wait a minute, this has already started. And so, you know, what you see with the 100 and like literally advertisers and the BBC saying you need to make the women's game as important as the men's game. The society had changed. And so with Harmanpreet, it's changed things massively, but women's cricket was already on that path. So is Harmanpreet more like Adam Gilchrist and, you know, because what she did, she basically supercharged a train that was already running. Adam Gilchrist isn't the first keeper batter. Okay. Andy Flower and Alex Stewart had done it all the way through the 90s before we got to Gilchrist, right? They had already proved why it worked and didn't work and had issues and everything else that you would have with that. So I do think from that perspective, it's a bit of a, that's where you have to go, how much did it actually change the game? But what about those other innings? Brendan McCullum's innings at the start of the IPL is incredibly important. IPL is probably going to be successful if he makes 10 of 12. Would it be as successful? Probably. Did it help early on? Definitely. Misbah Ul-Haq playing that shot in the World T20 final, which allows India to steal that tournament or win that tournament. Steal it, as in they didn't prepare for it and just turned up. But is really, really interesting, right? Because would there have been a movement towards the IPL so quickly and so powerfully if they hadn't won that tournament? I don't know. Would there have been as many stars for the IPL? You know, the IPL started with Test legends and this T20 winning side legends, right? So I think that's a really interesting one. The Clive Lloyd 1975 World Cup final. It's a weird tournament. Not all the games are broadcast. It's kind of being done and no one's quite invested in it emotionally or anything. Clive Lloyd makes that 100. Everyone sort of watches the final. That does change things. I think those are the four innings that instantly come to mind. If anyone wants to send me a message of any others that I've forgotten, I'm sure I have. But yeah, I'm not 100% sure. Oh, okay. No, wait, he's put another comment in. Okay. Sorry, I'll just get back to these last two. Your question was taken, Noor. It's just that I didn't understand what your super chat meant. You said W15 in comments. So I made comments about the W15 World Cup. Next time, just put in the super chat and then put in another message straight underneath. World Cup 15, Rohit, Jaiswal, VK, Sky. Oh, okay. He's coming up with his 15. Okay. I really didn't understand that. Rohit, Jaiswal, Virat, Sky, Dubé, Rinku, Hardik, Jadu or Akshar, Kartik, Bumrah, Siraj, Motion. I can't think you can pick Siraj at the moment, can you? I don't think you can pick Motion. Pant, Sampson, DK. Who's KD? Am I being thick here? I'm obviously being thick and I can't think of who he means that. Astu, Nadu, Harshit, Avesh. Oh, there you go. Well, you picked your side. Congrats. And Path says, how far are we from a player who can bat at 300 strike rate consistently? If he lost 15 balls, every IPL chase would be 80% easier. We looked at this before, Path. We are a long way from a batter who can score consistently at 300 because we really haven't had a batter score consistently at 200 at the moment, have we? So I would say that we are a long way short of this. And when we looked it up, I'm just trying to see if I can bring it up now while we're live. But our ball event. So if you look at free hits, I think it's still around 14 runs and over, is it? When you look at free hits and the way that they go. So with that in mind, I think you would have to say that we're a long way away from a batter being 300. We haven't had a batter be 200 yet, right? So if you're saying a player can average 300 strike rate, we're a miles away with that. Are we near a player who can go 300 every third innings, perhaps? Perhaps, yeah. There might still be another way that bowlers work out how to slow all this down and change things. So that's the big thing when it comes to all that, that these things change quite massively, dramatically from time to time. We are seeing a batting surge at the moment, partly because of the impact sub, but partly because batting runs per overs are going up pretty much everywhere. Bowlers will then get back on top again and things will change. Anyway. That is me done for today. I am Jared Kimber. This is The Wagon Wheel. Please go over to goodareas.co, have a look more of our stuff. Obviously, we've got the major channel, Crick Picks. We've got a bunch of Crick Picks coming up. And I've got a feature tomorrow on Sai Siddharthan, who might be my latest obsession. No, he definitely is my latest obsession. So please go and have a look at that. He's a fascinating player. And we will be back very soon with more podcasts, general nonsense, and everything else with me, Jared Kimber, here on Wagon Wheel. thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters. Both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.